Who are you? That's a kind of cosmic question, isn't it?
It's also a Who song.
Yeah, that's true, too. Well, in this particular instance, I'm Ken Hanke, which is...
unfortunate.
I'm a blight, but that's another story altogether. I'm a movie critic for the Mountain Express, is it? Yes, okay. And I'm one half of the Elitist Bastards. And... This
Am
fellow
I the better half?
Is the he's the better half. That's why he won't pose in a negligee.
The classy half.
Yeah, he's the classy half. And who are you though?
Justin Sowler.
Yeah, and what do you do?
I don't know. Watch movies sometimes, and then write about them. I guess is that a proper description?
I suppose that's a proper description. But who do you do this for?
Well, also the Mountain Express. Oh, we could have condensed this a good bit, Ken.
Well, we could have.
Inefficient.
Fine, you do the rest of the podcast.
Okay, that's fine.
You can talk about
movies. Go by a lot quicker.
Yeah, it will. Okay.
Ken loved The Right.
Ken did not love The Right.
Well, you're not talking. So. Anyway, where are we?
We are in the bar at the Cinema Lounge.
True. Where is the Cinema Lounge?
It's in the Carolina Asheville.
Where's the Carolina Asheville?
In
you
Asheville.
You do this to me every week.
Oh, yeah. Well, where is it?
It's in Skyland.
Oh.
I call it Skyland. It's South
My people
Asheville.
Call it Mays, but that's another story altogether. Yes.
Floridians?
Call it Mays.
Well.
And in any case, we have seen a selection of films. And we're going to natter on about them aimlessly.
This is true.
So, why don't you tell us about something you saw?
Well, I only saw one movie, I guess.
Oh, you want me to say something about the ones I've seen first, then? Or one of the, or a couple of them? We can split it up so you can have something to say.
I can talk about The Mechanic.
Fine.
Is that a good segue?
Yes.
Sort of.
He's erudite.
Put me on the spot like this. Anyway.
Oh, like you didn't know you were going to have to talk about this.
I forgot I watched it already.
Oh, okay.
Just tells you...
A great deal about it, yes.
The Mechanic's the new Jason Statham action flick. It's a remake of a Charles Bronson picture from... Is it 72?
72, yeah. It's actually when Michael Winner still had some clout, so one wonders why he was doing these things.
I don't know.
And anyway.
It's okay for an action movie. It's kind of dull and a little too
full of itself. Well, in which case I wouldn't say that's okay for an action movie.
Well, I mean, it's not like painful.
I mean, I read the publicity handouts. These things are almost always supposed to be adrenaline-fueled.
Well, I guess to an extent, but it's just not very
weak
fun.
Weak adrenaline.
It's not fun. I prefer my action movies to be ridiculous and stupid and over the top. And Statham has made many of these movies.
There's a couple of Cranks. The first Transporter, I never saw the others.
I never saw the second one, but I enjoyed the third one for the fact that he drives a car into a lake and then uses airbags and duffel bags to rise it from the bottom of the lake.
Are you saying it wouldn't work?
I think somebody argued with me online about it or something.
Oh, well, okay. Somebody will argue with you online about anything.
Yes. Anyway. It's okay, except it's not very fun because they seem to have some sort of reverence for the Bronson. That's the only thing I can
I'm going to have
feel.
To sit here and chew on the idea of having reverence for a Charles Bronson movie for a while.
So they take all of...
So keep talking.
They remove all of the personality from Jason Statham. So he's just sort of like...
There.
There. Ben Foster's fine, but I mean, it helps that he's not Jan Michael Vincent. Is that the guy's name? Who's in the original?
You think I have an encyclopedic knowledge?
He was in Airwolf. That guy on Airwolf.
Yeah, I think that's who it was. Yeah.
So, and then they have this awful, stupid twist ending, which is superfluous and pointless, except the original had a twist ending, so.
This one needs one, too. It follows as the night, the day.
Yeah. I'll have forgotten I watched it in a year until I see it at Walmart for $5. And at that point, I'll be more worried about being in Walmart, so.
I thought you'd be worried about the prospect that you might have forgotten that it was kind of dull and you might shell out the $5 without thinking.
I would remember.
As a statement.
Like, oh yeah, I remember. I did watch that, didn't I? So.
I don't know. I've picked up some pretty strange things in the $5 bin at Walmart. Well, and besides that,
buy them a Pepsi
movies. Here.
Well, do you want to talk about the right? I have a question. Speaking of stinks, okay, I have a question about the right. I haven't seen all of it. I saw a scene.
Yes.
Where they're, because this is an exorcism movie, which I don't know why that's a genre now.
It's a specific type of religio horror.
Right, but it's all.
So we're talking about the right
now? Same movie. Yes.
Okay.
There's a part where he's exorcising this pregnant woman.
Yeah, but Jack LaLanne is dead, so exorcise isn't what it used to be. No.
And this possessed girl, they have subtitles, and she says, "You stink." Is that really what Satan would say?
In PG-13, yes.
Okay. And am I right? Is that actually what?
Yes. Yes. He is exorcising this pregnant girl.
Uh-huh.
This is the same scene in which he, well, maybe because there's actually several, but there's one of these scenes where he is exorcising her, where he's forgotten to turn off his cell phone and has to take a call in the middle of the exorcism. Okay. Which is probably the wittiest thing in the movie.
Or completely on accident. Maybe he did get a call.
Well, or that's possible. Maybe it was really Anthony Hopkins' phone and, you know, I'm not going to miss this call for this dumb movie.
But we have a demon. Is it Satan or is it just some lower level?
It turns out to be Baal.
Which one's that?
I don't know. Some lesser deity, okay. Like Asmodeus or.
What does it help me?
What?
I need to know what this one's done.
It's not he's inhabited this pregnant girl and made her cough up nails.
And say things like, "You stink."
Yes.
And call people butthead.
Yes, because it's a PG-13 rated possession movie, which is, you know, this is why you end up with things like "Your mother sews socks in hell."
Is that in this too?
No, that would be a nice touch, but it's not in this.
That would be a very particular type of hell.
Yes.
And not very fun.
No.
Hell is one big sweatshop.
You know, I really do not hate this movie.
Why? And you've told me why.
Principally because it has Satan's mule in it.
Right, well, I'm sure Anthony Hopkins would take objection to being called that, but.
No. I don't mean Anthony Hopkins. I mean it actually has a mule, much like Francis the Talking Mule, but it doesn't talk.
So it's not. It's
no,
just
it doesn't
mule.
A talking so like mule, which I would have given this movie a recommendation if that mule talked.
Like that talking goat.
It was the only good thing in Drag Me to Hell was the talking goat when it comes right down to it, and you know, and that was too brief. That was its flaw.
Exactly.
It needed
more
talking goat.
We have more evil mule, but it doesn't talk.
He doesn't talk, but his eyes glow red.
Okay.
You know, this puts him on a par with the hero in terms of number of expressions. So, you know, his eyes glow red, the hero looks grim and grimmerer, and that's about the extent of it.
And his whole thing is that he wants to,
he's in exorcism school, if we can believe that there is such a thing. And he doesn't.
I've majored in
exorcism. Yes, well, the whole thing was that
with a minor in holy water.
You shouldn't major with a minor. That gets you in trouble. It gets you in jail sentence,
especially in
fact.
Church.
Yes.
This gets me a promotion.
That's probably true, depending on the faith, yes. The whole thing is that the premise of this is strictly that he has no option. It's either he's going to have to go into the seminary, or he's going to have to stay in the family undertaking business with Rutger Hauer,
right,
who's his dad. So he pretends that he goes to seminary school, having found a clause that he can get the 4-year education and then decide he doesn't want to be a priest. And this is where he goes until Toby Jones drops it on him that there is another clause that they can turn this free education into a student loan and he'll owe $100,000.
So it's like teaching fellows.
Yes. And so now he doesn't say he will do this, and he hasn't done it. But until such time, especially after he sees what an ace's absolutions this guy is at someone who's dying, complete, which is someone run over on a bicycle, complete with the spinning wheel shot, which is, you know, that's primo art, if you don't know. Tells him that, you know, he's going to give him this chance. He wants him to go for 2 weeks to exorcism school in Rome.
It's like camp.
Yeah, it's like camp.
Exorcism camp.
And it gets pretty campy, too. But
would you call it the trite instead?
No. No, I wouldn't call it the trite.
What about the wrong? Is that a good one?
It's too easy.
I know.
You know, I don't know.
How do you make it in this business, Ken? Bad puns.
Bad puns, yes, okay.
Look at Gene Shalit. Let's take a look at him.
You look at him. I can't.
Stare into his eyes. Satan's Gene Shalit. Glowing red.
Well, Gene Shalit and Satan may be on good terms for all I know. In any case, the movie's not good, but I've seen worse. And
I want that on the poster. I've seen worse.
I think that would be... There might be some value in trying to sell movies with honest quotes like that. I've seen worse, you know. This movie doesn't suck as hard as I thought it was gonna. That's frequently the case, though.
Yes.
You know, because I really thought this movie was gonna be a major moose fellation party, and you know, it's only
a minor
donkey fellation party.
Yeah.
So.
What about a mule? Satan's mule.
Satan's mule. Yes, it does, which is singularly pointless. So anyway, that was that. Now, what else did I watch?
I don't know. Well, the fact that you haven't killed yourself.
You're freaking worthless.
You opened a vein over a couple of these movies.
Yes. Beautiful. Spelt B-I-U-T-I-F-U-L.
Beautiful,
yes. The new Alejandro González Iñárritu movie.
Starring?
Javier Bardem.
You didn't say it as fancy.
I know. But it doesn't have all those neat marks through it. You know,
you can add some.
That's true. You said I say Javier Bardem.
Javier.
Yeah, that has something to do with coffee, I think. But in any case, it's probably slightly more depressing than even Amores Perros, 21 Grams, and Babel. Now, you know.
So it's not a laugh riot.
No, it is definitely Mrs. Laugh Riot by several levels. Although it actually, at some times, it gets to a point where it's like if you pile on one more bad thing for this guy, it's going to start being funny.
Right.
Because,
so
I mean, he's
how
got
many hours of hard luck?
2.5. 2.5 hours of Javier Bardem dying of cancer while trying to expiate his sins, dredge up enough money for his two children to live on, considering they live in the absolute worst slum in Barcelona. This doesn't look like a really promising thing. Deal with his bipolar quasi-ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
Make some kind of a living. Occasionally pause to talk to dead folks. He can talk to the recently dead, you see. This is good for picking up a few extra pesos. And what else is he dealing with? Well, he has guilt issues over the fact that he exploits illegal Asian immigrants making knockoff designer crap that gets sold on the streets of Barcelona. to unwary tourists. So, you know, I mean, it's wonderfully well made for what it is.
Uh-huh.
Bardem keeps the film afloat. And it makes Blue Valentine look like a laugh riot. It's not a happy picture. Bardem probably deserves that Oscar nomination, though, for keeping it as afloat as it is.
Right.
You know, I don't understand. I mean, you've got... There is no question in my mind but that Iñárritu is a talented man. Why is he afraid to do anything even remotely funny? It's like if he breaks a smile, it will completely destroy him.
It's serious art.
It's serious art. Yeah, well, whatever. Okay.
That's what real film is. Stuff nobody wants to watch.
Well, no, there are a few people in this world who...
A few, yeah.
A few, yes, and that's why the movies that they usually are wanting to know when they're coming to town are either never here or they're here for a week.
Yeah.
If we're unfortunate. I've never seen one bounced in less than a week, have you?
What, one of the depressing ones?
You know, any bad movie. Have you ever seen one chased out of town in less than a week?
I don't think it's possible unless...
Well, I don't know. It has been done before, but, I mean, you can get a movie replaced in midweek.
Tiny Furniture's leaving.
Yeah, well, I understand that. That was merciful. So, anyway, that was beautiful. And I've also seen Mike Leigh's Another Year.
Which is also not uplifting.
It's not. No, it actually is kind of uplifting. It just isn't a laugh riot either.
Okay.
But it is at least human. And it's compassionate. And it's not 2.5 hours long. It's just a little over 2 hours. It's fairly typical Mike Leigh slice of life. British middle class drama with some comedic touches, which is essentially you've got Jim Broadbent and Ruth Sheen. They're kind of the main characters. They're the characters around which everything else revolves, and they are an aging, slightly affluent couple who are at peace with themselves and the world, and of course they draw people who are anything but well balanced to them,
right.
You know, because I think they have the secret of happiness or something, and the people that they draw are seem to be going about the pursuit of happiness in all the wrong ways, and especially the main secondary character, which is played by Leslie Manville, who, interestingly enough, she played Jim Broadbent's wife in Topsy Turvy.
Okay.
Here she plays this mutton dressed as lamb woman who is looking for, I mean, she's got the hots for Jim Broadbent and Ruth Sheen's son. Even though, you know, in reality, Leslie Manville's like about 4 years younger than they are.
Okay.
It's not like this is a reasonable match. I mean, I'm not saying that couldn't happen, but there's absolutely no evidence that he's even slightly interested.
Right.
When she has a chance at somebody that might be interested, she's horrified because he's more like her than not.
Right.
She just has a serious drinking problem and tends to get loaded and say inappropriate things that are not funny, and she says them very loud, and she passes out in your living room and stuff like that. And we've all had friends like this or something. And, you know...
Speak for yourself.
I've seen some of your ex-girlfriends. You don't try and bamboozle me.
I've got my ex-girlfriends. But no, I have friends.
Yeah, well, you definitely have friends. Or acquaintances that
right.
qualify as friends in modern circles. So, I mean, this, however, is, I would say, a worthwhile film. I'm not saying Beautiful is not a worthwhile film, but this one at least will not make you want to open a vein.
Okay.
If a choice between the two, I would take this.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah, well, you know, at this point in the year, what we seem to be getting in the leftover realm are all sorts of really depressing movies. With this in mind, I'm really kind of looking forward to The Illusionist opening And I'm assuming that it might be bittersweet, but it's not going to be depressing, depressing.
Right. Well, we still got somewhere.
It's a Sofia Coppola picture. How good can it be?
I didn't say it was going to be good.
Oh, okay.
I just said it wasn't going to be depressing because it will have zero
emotion. It will have no emotional value, whatever, yes. Yes, the Thursday Horror Picture Show. What are we showing there, little Justin?
Well, we have to talk about where it's at because Steve will make us do it again at the end.
Where is it?
It's at the Cinema Lounge.
Where's that?
In Carolina, Asheville.
Yes, it
where
is.
Where we're at right now.
And it's the Thursday Horror Picture Show.
If you need to know where that's at, yes.
That's
on Thursday.
And
it's,
that, it's on Thursday, it's is free. That right? Okay, that makes sense, yes.
Right.
And what is it?
The Brood.
The Brood. The
David Cronenberg.
Yes.
Everyone's favorite Canadian.
You're probably right, come to think of it.
Yes.
You know,
I know you're a big Geddy Lee fan, but we'll take Cronenberg.
Just because you have those erotic pictures of Anne Murray, I mean, you know, I don't know.
Anyway.
You have a complete set of bare naked ladies records, too, don't you?
I'll throw this drink on you. How dare you.
Well, I finally got a rise out of him, didn't I? Mm-hmm.
Turn that off. We're going to have words. Anyway.
Probably none that we've never used before.
Well,
just maybe not
you.
Directed at me.
Anyway.
Anyway.
I've never actually seen all of this movie. Mostly because you let me borrow it, and then I let a friend of mine borrow it before I finished it.
And then he lost it. Of course, he never brought it back.
Yeah, so...
Do I know this friend?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so.
I've told you, like...
Yeah, but I don't remember this kind of crap. You're lucky I remember the directions to get here. Well, anyway,
we're all fortunate.
Yeah, that. Well...
Anyway...
This is his judgment call.
I find myself with Cronenberg, at least, this weird habit, like, I like Cronenberg a whole lot. He's one of my favorite directors, but I always find myself watching... the same Cronenberg films?
Yeah.
Because there's still a whole bunch I have not seen. But he's made a lot of movies. So.
Yeah, well, what have you not seen?
Well, Crash, I'm going to...
I never made it through Crash, actually.
Okay. Well, I know, like, I've got Scanners and Videodrome and Naked Lunch and History of Violence and Eastern Promises and...
You don't have M. Butterfly?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. Missed one there. How about they came from within or Shivers or whatever it is?
That.
Okay.
I have Spider at home, but I've never managed to watch it.
And you've never managed to see all of The Brood. Well, this is your lucky week, then, because you can see all The Brood, which is probably his first, I would say it's his first really professional-looking movie, and it's the first one where he could, you know, have bona fide actors, in this case Oliver Reed and Samantha Eggar. Which
and
definitely,
Oliver Reed
definitely,
is definitely bona fide.
Yes, and it lends more tone than Marilyn Chambers did to Rabbit, I think. And, you know, I mean, porn stars are, you know, they don't really
she's
lend
soft
tone.
Soft core, though, does that count?
I don't know if she's exactly soft core.
Steve, give us the verdict. Don't act like you don't know.
Behind the Green Door, I don't think is soft core. I've never seen it, but I don't think it's soft core. Come and see it because it's disgusting. And shocking.
And
the
Oliver
violence
Reed.
Is brutal.
More people
Oliver
should
Reed.
See Oliver Reed movies.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can't go wrong with an Oliver Reed. Well, now that's, you know, I've seen Dr. Heckle and Mr. Hyde.
With a good Oliver Reed
movie. You can't go wrong with a good Oliver Reed movie. Yes, there you go. And Samantha Eggar, I mean, you know, who will lend new meaning to the delivery of the line, I disgust you, don't I? Especially when you see what she's doing and the fascination that anybody could be surprised that that disgusted somebody else, which I won't tell you what that is because it would give away one of the key moments.
And there's never a movie quite like a Cronenberg film.
No, I mean, and this has murderous tots that aren't tots, but they look like tots running around in hooded Dr. Dentons. Now, really. Why would you not want to see a movie like that?
Steve
looks perplexed.
He's not going to show up.
No, he's not going to show up.
Is that what he's missing?
Yeah, he has better things to do. Or
see what the case says.
What does the case say?
One of director David Cronenberg's darkest and most twisted films, says Yahoo Movies.
Well, there you go. A Yahoo has endorsed it. Okay.
So
there you have it. Then, and you should come see it because we tell you to. And really, do you need a better reason? There you go. See, he agreed with that. So that moves us on to
Actual Film Society, which is also in the same place as we. It's pretty much the same thing except
Tuesday. It's pretty much the same thing except on Tuesday. And it doesn't have a
whole lot. It's
kind of
classier.
It's a little classier.
Ken wears a tuxedo usually.
That's true. Under my clothing, yes. And this week, well, actually, this week it's kind of a horror film in a way.
In a way.
You know, it's a sort of a gothic German expressionist film, just happened to be made in 1955 by Charles Laughton.
And it's the only movie he ever
made. The only movie Charles Laughton ever made, yes. And it's called Night of the Hunter, and it stars Robert Mitchum and Shelley Winters. And Lillian Gish, who was very good in it. And if you haven't ever seen the film, then you really have no excuse for not showing up, because it's like nothing else, and it's particularly like nothing else from 1955. This is strikingly different from just about anything, wouldn't you say?
Yes. And there's so much cinema going on, I think.
Oh, yeah,
there's
so much filmmaking and filmmaking technique, and there's so much detail.
Right. And little odd, strange touches. The part where they're in the rowboat and she's singing is still just
that really made
strange.
An impression on you.
Yes,
you know?
It's incredibly strange scene, but it works very well.
And then the thing where the boat goes past and we've got like frogs in the foreground,
yeah,
or rabbits or the gigantic,
like, why is this
ridiculous
in here, but
spider
it works.
Web. I know, you know.
So.
And then the famous scene where Robert Mitchum is pursuing these children and they're hiding in a barn, and you see him in the distance singing Leaning on the Everlasting Arm while riding a mule, probably Satan's mule, come to think of it, or a horse, I'm not sure what it is. It looks like some sort of quadruped across in the distance, and then you find out later that they force the perspective that that's actually not Robert Mitchum, and it's not a full-size anything, it's a midget on a pony. And it's much nearer the camera than it appears.
But it's all kinds of little tricks and...
Yeah, it's full of
strange
them.
Angles and...
Yeah, it's kind of like a silent movie. It's kind of like a silent German movie, but in English with a soundtrack. And at the same time, it's very American.
Right.
So it's...
It's definitely something... It's one of those, like, if you had a film class, you would.
If you had a film class, there's no reason that you would not show this film, and every reason you should. And if you have an interest in film and you have not seen this film, there's every reason that you should come here.
If you don't have an interest in film,
what the hell is it anyway? Yeah. So, yeah. I probably have nothing to say to you, and you probably have nothing to say to me.
This is as essential as we can.
Yeah. This is essential. Essential. This is
and it's entertaining.
I expect
so
it.
Not,
yes, it is. So what opens this Friday?
Rectum?
No, it was Sanctum.
Okay.
Which sounds a lot like decaffeinated coffee.
Saying what it's going to be.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, it's in 3D and it was produced by James Cameron, so...
Looks like it was made for a buck and a quarter.
Supposedly they threw $30 million into this thing. So, you know, I mean, that's, you know, they certainly spared no expense on
building
cast.
Those caves, or,
you know,
the guy
Richard
from
Roxburgh,
the guy from the Square. I think that's who.
What?
The guy from the Square's in it.
Oh, is he?
That's the only guy I recognize.
Oh, Richard Roxburgh is the Duke in Moulin Rouge. He's also Dracula in Van Helsing. You know, now there's something that guaranteed to empty any cinema on Earth. I mean, that's almost a given. And then the Welsh gentleman whose name is something like
it's
Mr. the Welsh Fantastic. Equivalent of John Griffin or Griffith, and you know, he's known
grunts.
For being young Griffith. He's known for, I can't speak Welsh. The Welsh can't speak Welsh. They just throw leeks in the air. You know, best known as what's his name? Reed Richards in the Fantastic Four pictures.
Mr. Fantastic.
That brings us to The Roommate.
Yes. Which is the horror movie? Is that what it's supposed to be?
The synopsis, which is basically it tells you that it's some college roommate situation where one TV actress becomes obsessed with the other TV actress. And Cam Jigandet is undoubtedly going to intervene. I believe, since this has not been shown to anybody, I believe that since it even has no shills on the IMDb, that this is probably going to be every bit as bad as that plot synopsis sounds.
Right.
So
I'll have fun watching it.
It's yours.
I know.
Yeah, well, so you're,
we've already come to that conclusion.
Yeah, we've already come to that
Thank
conclusion.
You.
I get to watch Rectum. So, you know. And I guess that probably takes care of it for this week. I hear the music in the background.
Okay.
Yes.
And we have Beautiful in Another Year that open as well.
Yes, they open as well. We've already talked about them. So, you know, you can come see them.
They're playing us off, Ken.
Oh, yeah, they are.
All right.
What can I say? In any case, I guess I can say that I'm Ken Hankey.
I'm Justin Sowler.
And we are brought to you through the
magic of
radio. No, this isn't radio. But nonetheless, we are brought to you through the extreme benevolence of the Mountain Express and the engineering and producing genius
magic
that is Steve Schoenfeld. And we'll be back next week to talk about more exciting motion picture fare.
And calling Sanctum Rectum constantly.
Yes.
Because we're classy.
Yeah, we are. We are definitely the classiest critics you're going to find. The classiest critics money can buy. And it doesn't take much.